Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Art of Craftsmanship podcast. My name is Dustin O'Hara, and I'm here with my co-host and brother, Devin O'Hara.
Hello.
We are excited to be back for episode 22. It's getting kind of crazy. And it's been fun. Devin, what do you got for us today?
Remember, when disaster strikes, the time to prepare has passed.
Dun, 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 dun. When disaster strikes, the time to prepare has passed. I wonder.
Yes. I don't know. I have the name, but I don't know who it is. Do you know Stephen Kreyos?
Nah.
I got it from a survival and emergency preparedness website. I thought it was cool. Because we wanted to talk about, or what the theme was, redemption and starting over and that type of thing, right?
Right. Yep. Perseverance.
Perseverance is the word I was looking for. Perseverance through your projects, and I was looking for that type of quote, but a lot of them were kind of corny, you know. or they were way too heavy, like when everything's at its darkest. Like, no, we're just talking about something wrong with your project that you're working on. I started looking through like preppers pages and stuff, and those are a lot. Those are funny. Those are always good.
They were getting a little bit more, a little heavier, maybe a little crazy, a little out there.
Yeah. There's a whole Prepper's Creed.
Yeah?
Yeah, I could go through that later.
All right. That there's a great song by the band called The Mountain Goats, and it's all about like having a bad perspective on life. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the quotes is... our friends always tell us that it's darker before the sun rises. We're pretty sure they're all wrong. You know, so it's like, it's all like their perspective is all horrible the whole time. Throughout the whole song, it's just one line after another that's about like, you know, I hope you die and I hope I die before you and da 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 da. It's so funny.
Yeah.
But he sings it like in a real peppy voice, like, dun, 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 dun. And then it's like all this like horrible negative perspective on life.
It's great. Yeah. I'm trying to find quotes every week that aren't sappy.
Yeah.
Or that would be on the side of like a girl's coffee mug, you know, something.
Something. An affirmation.
Yeah, right. Of whatever their affirmation for whatever they want to do that week.
Right.
They can find their right quote and put it up on Instagram and make themselves feel better.
This is my affirmation for this week.
Right.
You can be beautiful, but you don't have to be perfect.
Just because your legs are long and hairy doesn't mean you're not beautiful. She don't want to shave her legs. That's all. I understand.
Yeah, right. Natural is beauty. Our opinions on that are coming out on the podcast.
But I like that. The disaster strikes. The time to prepare is past.
That is good. Yeah, that's a perfect prepper mindset.
Right, right. It's too late for you now. I won't help you.
But that is, you know, that makes sense though too. It's like if there's a disaster, it's, you know, you've already gone past the point of preparation.
Yeah.
It's already passed. So there are two ways to go. You either give up or you move on. Which is what the theme of the podcast is about, perseverance. It's perfect.
That's right. Find your closest hillbilly friend and
yeah,
hang with them. Bring them your stores and
I definitely have that mindset, but in my mind, it's like, yeah, I want to be prepared. I want to have some things available, but it's almost a hypothetical preparedness. Mm. Like, I'm not really worried that something like that's going to happen, but my love of apocalyptic movies and books and all that stuff, just, it's in my mind as someone who loves to make things that are bespoke and, you know, speak back to history and, you know, have like this history to them, that it's like, yeah, I want to have a couple knives because just in case I need them. Like, I'm always take a knife in the car with me. I mean, I have a Skeletool, Leatherman Skeletool on my pocket at all times, but I always bring a fixed blade knife with a fire steel on it pretty much anytime I go anywhere more than an hour and a half or 2 hours away. Cause you never know, you know, if you're halfway in between and your car breaks down and you're on the highway.
Yeah.
In the middle of the night, you might have to make a fire.
Right. Your mom would tell you, like, I'll take a jacket. Even if you're going in somewhere, just in case you break down, always have a jacket in the car with you.
Yep. Yeah, I always tell my daughter, like, my daughter hates wearing socks and shoes. So she always just wants to put on, like, shoes or put on flip-flops, and obviously all summer that's fine. But anytime we're driving anywhere further or if it's any amount of cold out at all, I'm like, no, shoes and socks, get your socks. Something happens, we got to walk somewhere, you got to bring your shoes and socks.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was thinking about that, the prepper thing, and realizing I really don't have anything. I mean, I got weapons, you know, I've firearms and knives and stuff, but you know, the stuff, food and stuff, we really don't have much other than whatever dry goods we have in our house right now. And also I think it's nice to have firearms, at least in this country. Yeah. But then it also gives you a good sense of security as for protecting your home. But if something were to happen, we all have firearms.
Right.
So everyone's even again.
Right.
You know, so it's...
Maybe.
It will help, right. But, you know...
Yeah. It almost like... almost gives you a false sense of security.
Yeah, like if something goes down, I'll be fine with just this. Like, no, your single shot shotgun's not going to protect you from much if there's a crowd. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Or well, a bunch of other people with ARs and that type of thing that can.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, I know that this is something you've talked about before, but was it Adam Carolla with his podcast or whatever it was, talking about, you know, having like, if you can, having like, if you have a multi chambered shotgun or something, having like a rock salt, you know, bullet in the first one and then like a real bullet or a
shell.
A bird shot or something.
Right.
You know, cause it's like, if someone's gonna, actually like see you with a gun and you cock that gun and they're still coming at you, you know, you gotta be able to shoot something at them.
Right. And then, that should stop someone, rock salt,
without killing them. Yeah.
Or at least make their head down for a second, you would think.
Right. Yeah. Right. Enough to, like, if someone's going to keep coming at you after that, then they've got much more in mind than just, you know, breaking and entering and trying to steal something.
Right.
And probably they're on drugs. There's nothing kind of scarier than a firearm being pointed straight at you.
Yeah. Everyone reacts to that, I would think.
Yeah. Right. I mean, as much as, like, when we're kids and someone goes to shoot a spitball at you from a straw, you flinch and close your eyes and cover your face. You know, it's our natural reaction. Ah, you get something fired at you, or, you know, in your case, you know, shooting Nerf bullets at your wife.
That's right.
It's always fun too.
I make sure to hide so she doesn't see me around the corner and record it slow motion to get a good reaction. And then you see me run and then the camera just goes black.
And it doesn't happen again for a couple months.
There's some cursing and then chasing away.
Damn it. What Maeve has to look forward to in her future.
Nail Maeve right in the noggin. Pow! Just when she starts walking.
Bet she didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
Sit back down.
Try again.
She never walked after that day. Just scooted. Yeah, that's, yeah, I have, as a backpacker and camper, I have, you know, water purification tablets and a pump and things like that. I have all the stuff in my shop or in the basement where, you know, I have all of our camping supplies. So I have that in my mind too. Like if something were to happen, I have a pack. It pretty much has everything in it that I can just grab and put on. It doesn't have clothes and stuff. It doesn't have supplies in it, but it has all of my gear. You know, when we finish a backpacking trip, we kind of clean out all the clothes and the food and whatever else and trash, yeah. And then we just put all the gear back into the pockets. So it's all there. It's all ready to go in the pack.
Right.
You just have to add in your clothes and your food and you're ready to go.
Right. You'd be good in 20 minutes. You'd be ready to go out.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah. And a couple knives, a couple axes, firearm or two.
I mean, you got a survival knife that you made in an hour, so.
Exactly. Yeah. Nothing. Yeah. I don't have to worry about making a knife. I can just grab a few and then grab a few other things. I'll be good to go. A couple bag of rice in there or something.
Some Pop-Tarts.
Yeah, right. I have thought about, you know, just keeping a couple gallons of water around just in case, but we have our property here, we have water nearby. So
yeah,
know, if it were a situation where we needed water, there's plenty of water. And like I said, I have purification tablets and water filter pump and stuff. So
mm-hmm.
it's again, it's like that prepper mindset, but with a certain amount of realism to it. You know, it's like, yeah, I think through these things because you never know what will happen and it's good to be prepared.
Right.
But the like large event that would then, you know, make you need to have a whole bunch of water, a whole bunch of food, a bunch of stuff stashed up to be able to survive for weeks and weeks. You know, that seems more hypothetical to me than a reality.
Yeah. And with us, we're so close to relatively so close to Baltimore City that it wouldn't make much difference.
Right.
Both of us are off the major highway that comes north out of the city.
Yeah.
So it's in reality we wouldn't be safe here anyway, so there's no point it's
in,
what
in setting to set up to be stay in one place.
Right. Yeah. Someone said that you're stocking up to like you're making a treasure trove for people to come and get.
Yeah.
You're just preparing for someone else to come take it, right? Because there's a giant trail coming every which way out of Baltimore City. They're all highways that people would just hike up to us in no time.
Yeah.
So we'd probably have to be on the move anyway. There's no point in having 1,000 gallons. But if we were someone like Wrangler Star, someone who has, you get 40, 50 acres out in the middle of the country or out there on the West Coast, then we'd probably think a little bit. We'd probably maybe go, okay, this could be our spot to stay.
Right. Right, exactly. If you had a piece of land that was, you know, isolated enough that it made sense, then it would make sense to stock up there. Or at least have, like, I think every time, it's funny, I really enjoy Wrangler Star's videos. You know, there's not, I mean, there are definitely some political similarities that we have and some differences, and that's fine, but his perspective on how he looks at things is very open-minded. Like it's always, you know, he's like, well, yeah, I want to do these prepper. I want to have these things ready because you don't know what'll happen, you know, and for this amount of money, you can have it ready for yourself to protect yourself and your family. Like it always goes back to his family. He's like, if something were to happen, I want to be ready, you know, to be able to stay here at my house and have what we need to take care of ourselves, to kind of like bunker down a couple friends nearby that we can radio together just to make sure, you know, everyone's okay and help out. You know, he's like, I want to have some, you know, 50 gallons of gasoline or whatever, so that way then I can, you know, go out and help other people.
Right.
Or, you know, he has the ability to look at it in a mindset that seems realistic to me.
Yeah. You know? And I think some of it seems a little crazy sometimes, but also I think those people, well, maybe not all of them, but are ready to help other people if something happens like that. Like, it's like the guy who keeps chains and stuff in his truck.
Yeah.
It's like, why do you keep all this junk in your truck, but then he pulls someone out of a ditch or he's got a winch or something, then he goes, look, you know, this is why it helps sometimes. And he's the guy who's going to stop and help you.
Right.
All the other people who don't prepare and think that stuff is crazy, they're going to pass you by.
Yeah, and they're just not prepared.
Right, they're like, oh, too bad. I'm not going to pull them out with a Prius and not, like, sorry. Like,
yeah, right.
I got nothing.
I mean, I have, same thing. When I got my truck, it was like, okay, when I have a truck that actually potentially could do some good, if I, you know, it's not four-wheel drive, but it is a truck, and, you know, I have a tow hitch, and so I bought a cheap, you know, I think I got a used come along to put in the back, and, you know, maybe 20 or 30 feet of chain. I just made a little canvas bag and put it inside that, put it in the back of my truck.
Mm-hmm.
And, Yeah, and then I have, you know, like my jack I know is there. I have jumper cables. And even when we got our new car, my wife, you know, our old car was in an accident, and the tow company came and took it wherever, and we never actually like saw it again. We got our stuff out of it, but I forgot to grab the jumper cables out of the back. And I like went back I was like looking, and I was hoping my wife grabbed them, but she didn't. So I was like, the first thing I did when we got a new car, I went out and bought another set of jumper cables and put them in the back of her car.
Because,
you know, I would say 75% of the time you're the person who has jumper cables, you know, if they're like, I've run out, you know, if my batteries died before, and I feel like every time that's happened, because I have jumper cables, I can ask someone else to jump.
Right. and just having it, you're there again, you're ready to help. I think I've given just as many people a jump as I've received.
Yeah. Yep.
There's been a lot of people you just see kind of standing there wandering or looking around, and you're like, you all right? Need jump? Like,
yeah,
and
right.
And they're like, yeah, I can't. And then you're there.
Yep. Yeah. My, our car, we just got it worked on, and, our battery was low. It had some low cold cranking ability. So because it's chilly now and getting chillier in the mornings, it was having trouble starting. And so my wife got a new battery. So she had to go get a new battery, but she had to get a jump to get home from work the other evening. And we have the cables. Unfortunately, her coworker has I think she's got a RAV4 maybe, and the battery is set deep back inside under the hood, like under the dash, and they could get to the positive end, but they couldn't get to the negative. So, you know, that would work fine. If someone else was jumping her car, you could hook into their positive and hook into the engine block, and it would be fine to jump that car. But to be able to jump someone else's car, they weren't able to get it. So fortunately, our dad doesn't live very far from that, and I called him up, and dad did the rescue, went and jumped Nicole, and she came home. But but again, you know, it's like if they were able to do it, then she was perfectly capable of doing it on her own.
Right.
Yeah. You know, because it's there. They were able to do it. So
yeah,
just the little things, right? They're the practical ways to be prepared and be ready, be resilient, be able to,
resilient.
You know? Yeah. So yeah. So I'm still going to ask this, even though I know that you're not drinking beer today, but I was going to ask you what craft beers you have, because we talked about craft beer. Save that for the very last thing on the Thanksgiving episode. I was like, I'm thankful for craft beer.
Yeah.
But I did want to say, my wife picked up some beer on the way home last night and got what I'm drinking right now is Dogfish Head 90-minute IPA. The 60-minute is pretty common and popular around, but this is a holiday variety pack. So I'm drinking a 90-minute Dogfish Head. And then I have another Dogfish Head here. I have a All Things Yet IPA, botanical IPA. Whoa. An IPA brewed with a blend of botanicals borrowed from our distiller's stash. That's a 6.5. What's the, this 90's got to be high APV alcohol. No, that's not. 9%. And then I also have a third beer as well. I have a one of our favorites. I have a Tropicannon by Heavy Seas Mango Lime IPA. All IPAs, all good craft brews.
Well,
while we're chatting.
You might have peer pressured me. I might have to go bust in and find the last couple beers in my fridge after my coffee. I'm drinking the coffee my wife made for me. It's got some peppermint sweetener in it. It's very Christmassy. But I've got a bunch of Trogues mixed pack.
Right. Yeah, and just the other night you brought over was the Dewclaw Sweet Baby Jesus.
Yeah.
That chocolate peanut butter stout. That's good.
Yes, sir.
Stout season.
So I might get some Trogues. They also make that Mad Elf. You ever have Mad Elf? Those are heavy. They're like they're like 14%.
Woo.
Man. But I don't have any of those today.
Perpetual.
Speaking of Christmassy drinks and stuff, I guess we can kind of discuss what we've been doing. In general, we've been getting ready for Christmas right after Thanksgiving.
Yep.
It's a new tradition now with my wife and I. We go right out, get the tree the day after. We went to a Christmas tree farm near us, and right away there's a sign for masks, and I just assume that now. we've kind of gotten to a point, you know, we don't look for the signs anyway. We just pop it on when you get out of the car.
Yeah, right.
And then I kept walking. Then once we're in the Christmas tree farm, I took it off, and people still had it walking around, which was a little odd to me. And I understand, I guess they were trying to follow the rules.
Right.
But it's also, we're out on a Christmas tree farm. No one's around you.
Right, yeah.
Like, it's like, it's like 100 acres.
Yeah.
And really, when you're looking for Christmas trees in a Christmas tree farm, I feel like there's a rule anyway not to get too close to other people. Because then you're like snooping on their picks. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right, exactly.
If you see me go near something good, just stay away. And if I walk out, then you can like sneak around and like check out what I passed up. But you're not supposed to be getting close anyway. Like if I'm standing next to a tree, you can't come on and be like, this one is good, and like jump down and start to...
Right, got it. Yeah, that's like, I feel like I have that same mindset when I'm at like a flea market or an antiques mall, you know, and someone's looking at something, you can't just come up right next to them, look at the, what they're looking at.
Right.
Like, oh, that's cool, and take it. Like, cause it's kind of like, it's a treasure hunt, you know, like you're fine. You're looking for the best one. So there's a little bit of etiquette. Like you said, you got to give some distance. Right. So it's perfect for social distancing.
Right.
So
give me a little distance on the tree. So I took my mask off until I got back to where they bail it up for you and stuff, you know, and it was just, especially I'm huffing and puffing anyway, dragging that, that beast.
Your corona all over everything.
All over, over our own tree that we took
all over the tree and the grass. People are going to get on their grass.
Don't lay on the grass.
Yeah, right. Don't roll around during Christmas tree park.
Yeah. So, and then we got out of there and. It was good. We strapped it to the RAV4, and it's all set now. We got everything done that night. I think I sent you a picture, and it was, like, all up.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, done. So you're like, told you. Dang. Quickly done. Hey, you know, it's like, I do like the schedule of that. You know, it's like, you know, on that day, no matter what, you're going to do it. Like, and then it's done. It's all done in one day, and then you have, you can just enjoy it from then on.
Yeah. It's a part of the holiday plans, right? We have Thanksgiving, and then the day after Thanksgiving, we go and get our Christmas tree and try to decorate the house. And we did everything. I mean, we have a relatively small place, but we got a lot of stuff that Caitlin puts around, and I put the lights on the outside, but just around the porch, so it wasn't anything crazy.
Right. Nice.
And yeah, we're set up.
Sweet. Yeah, we, we're going to do that this week, so it's Thursday after Thanksgiving, so we're a week out now. So we usually wait about a week, you know, we usually wait till the following weekend. So now we're in the first actual weekend of December, and then that's usually when we get it. So we're gonna get our tree this weekend, and we ordered some lights to go around our house on the top lip of the roof all the way around, and then we got some hanging Christmas tree light, or Christmas snowflake lights to hang down from the front entryway, and we got some tinsel to wrap around the banisters, some tinsel wreath stuff, a new wreath at the door. We, my wife, years go different ways. Some years we'll make wreaths, some years we'll buy them. We bought a fake wreath like 10 years ago. We've been using that same wreath on the off years, the years that we don't get a chance to make a wreath. And, so this year we got a new one. It's really nice. It was like a fairly simple wreath, just mostly just green. And it was backed by like, it's, so it's, you know, the plastic pine green, but it's pretty realistic looking. And then behind it, there's a whole another layer of like brown sticks that kind of follow it around. Ooh. Like a spiral. So you get this kind of, you know, twiggy background, and then the pine needles on, you know, the pine branches on top of it, and then had it, a bow that came with it. But we're going to add in some, we'll add in some natural elements. So we always get some like the red berries and stuff and make a different bow or whatever. So
yeah, there's definitely a price level on wreaths and stuff, fake wreaths, where it becomes acceptable.
Yeah.
Like if you spend under like 20 or 30 bucks, it's probably not decent.
Right.
But you spend a little bit more than that, you can start getting something that looks real. Yeah, we have the same thing. We have a plastic wreath, but you can't tell the difference. Everything, it looks real.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, it's that look from a distance, you know, same, you and me, we both live out in the middle of the country, so we're the only ones that are going to see our door.
Right.
Maybe, you know, maybe I'll see yours, maybe our, you know, brothers right. and parents and stuff. But other than that, so it's not like we're fooling ourselves. We right. know it's fake, but it's just, it's for the look, the ambiance, you know, for the,
yeah, it's
the whole Christmas spirit
to stay alive in the weather. I mean, definitely yeah, always yeah. real tree inside, and then outside put some, you know, fake stuff on just to,
right. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. We are always a real tree. We grew up with real trees and
yeah. Now what so is nice. There is I see the ugliest Christmas trees on social media. And I don't know what people are doing and what happened. If all lost our mind, either people have those really tall, skinny ones like in the corner.
Right.
And they pick like one theme so you have like silver everything on it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a, it's kind of a feeling know. To it. It feels stare. It feels like it should be in the corner of like Kohl's, not in your living room.
And our parents have gone that way
a little bit.
Yeah,
what's up with that?
They got that tall, skinny tree. It rotates. it's all yeah. pre lit. And mom and dad are like, "This is great. Yeah. It's already done. Put it in a box. Put it away." Yeah, but we definitely. We always grow up with real trees. But I guess it's just the you get to get up in years. You don't want to actually go out yeah. and put the effort into getting.
I think once they hit, once they didn't have us four
to
us
do all the
and
work.
Our brothers to do all the work for them. They said, yeah. "Man, this is a what jerks. What a mess. This is horrible."
What are we doing? Why have we done this so many years? So, oh, that's right. We just had to sit there and supervise while the boys did everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mom handed the thing. Dad wouldn't even. I don't know where Dad was. He was drinking coffee.
He would do the lights. He would usually do the lights.
Oh, what? Yeah, okay.
He would help set it up and get it steady. He would do the lights, and then once the lights were on, then Mom would sit there and she'd hand out all the different ornaments.
Yeah.
And let us put them on there, you know, supervise.
I feel like, yeah, we have a, I have a Christmas tree that looks like that, which I remember.
Yeah.
So I don't know. And there's a lot of weird, and people are using too many LED lights now that look horrible in their house. Like it's super bright and sharp and blue and oh, it's so bad. There's no warmth to it. Bulbs, incandescent bulbs, there's warmth. It's like a flame. That's what humans yeah. want. That's what we want to like get around. We want to glow. We don't want a sharp like edge to light.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, like obviously LED technologies come a long way and they can do all sorts of different stuff, but there's still just something really nice about an little incandescent bulb.
Mm,
you know, mm-hmm. that color is just, like you said, there's that warmth to it. That little yellow light just feels yeah, nice against the green of the pine tree. And,
right. Yeah, it's
Christmas spirit.
Yeah. And people talk about like the price savings, like, okay, you're saving $10 in the month of December. Right. Like, okay. You win that one. Like, you'll put $1,000 worth of gifts on a credit card, but God forbid you spend the extra $10 on decent lights. But yeah, to right. all those with LED lights, you know, you do you, I guess.
Yeah, good on you. way to be into the Christmas spirit.
Yeah, at least you're putting them out there. But
right,
yeah. And they have gotten a little better with like the coverings they put on the bulbs now. They're a bit softer.
Right. Yeah.
I guess they're just figuring out what to put over it. Some type of filter, diffuser, you know, diffuse, yeah. yeah, something that makes it a little less harsh, but
right,
yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, well, we've been doing, you know, got after Thanksgiving, kind of got settled back in, you know, after the break, and we had my daughter had a couple extra days off because Baltimore County had a ransomware attack, Baltimore County schools. So all of the devices were infected and whatnot. So she got the day before Thanksgiving break off, that Wednesday, and then Monday and Tuesday of this week. So she just went back to school on Wednesday. So had a little bit extra time, which is cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, I got back to it and we met up. We meet up on Monday and Tuesday or Tuesday and Wednesday.
And oh, yeah.
Finished the bow making video.
Woo!
It was awesome, the hickory bow video, and it was hard. We, you know, we kind of took a break for Thanksgiving, and I just you know, that weekend and stuff, and just, man, I was itching to get back in and work on it.
Yeah,
the whole time. Like,
we were
so
really
ready to do it.
We
yeah.
were really rushing to try to get it done by Thanksgiving.
Yeah,
and get it out right before Thanksgiving. Well, no, we were.
Yeah, we were. Trying. We were trying. I mean, we got the tillering tree video out because that kind of
right.
popped up in the middle where I decided, you know, we had this tilling tree that I wanted to make. And so we're like, well, let's make a quick video of that, which we did in a couple hours and got that out of the way. So we had something to put out before Thanksgiving.
Right.
A little teaser video for the bow making video, but now that one's done. So working on that and getting that out soon.
Yeah, and, that's all. I mean, this is not always. This is the second bow video we've done.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's slightly terrifying for me. It's almost like if you're in the car and someone's driving in snow, right? You feel a little less safe.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, it's fine, settle down. But you're not in control of it. So you feel, right. you're always the most anxious one. Mm-hmm. That's how it is me watching Dustin make bows and then stringing it up and pulling on it and stretching it and working it. Ugh. Man.
Just cringing like, oh, it's going
to
break.
Just waiting for it to snap, and then it's another 6 days of shooting because it broke.
Yeah, you're like, let me get some more pictures. Let's shoot it. Like, just shoot it once, and then we'll do an outro. I'm like, well, you know, we shoot it once, and we get it on camera, and then we can shoot it 10 more times. If it breaks then, you know, well, what are you going to do? I like your we were like, well, yeah, but if it breaks, then no one's going to think you can make bows very well. I was like, oh, yeah, that's right.
Right. You can't end the making a bow video with the bow breaking.
Breaking. Yeah, right.
Then, like,
no
great.
One's gonna, yeah, right.
Let's follow your directions and finish with a broken bow.
Let's keep watching your videos where your things break at the end. Said no one.
Right. Here, I'm going to hang an axe today, and then at the end of the video, it just flies straight off backwards.
Flies off.
Well, that's it, folks. That one didn't work.
You
hope you enjoyed it. Let me see what you've done.
Yours turned out better than mine did.
Yeah, you can't end it that way. We would have had to. I don't know. Make that like a oh, I can't believe the disaster, like that type of video.
Right. Yeah,
and then maybe try another one or just abandon all that footage and have a little bit of it breaking at the beginning of.
Another video
of it. Like, look what happened before we did all this. But man, that's thrown away. A week's worth of shooting.
Yeah. Well, that actually leads us perfectly into our topic, which we kind of hinted at a little bit and talked about with resilience and making things and staying. You know, keep on making, and you know, makers are going to fail. Mm. Right. There's the quote that says, "Mistakes are proof that you're trying." So, you know, it's your mistakes. That's along the way, you're going to make a mistake. You're going to fail, but that just means that you're trying something new. You're trying something that you're not perfect at. And, you know, I've made a few bows in the grand scheme of things, maybe 10 bows, and that's not that many. And I mean, the hickory bow that I just made in the video, that's the second time I've ever made a bow out of hickory.
Right.
I made Osage bows, made some out of ash. And, you know, so it was like, I had to, you know, go into it with a mindset of, this is a thing that I know I can do because I've done it before. I have the steps, I have the directions, you know, and all the layout, and I have all the guidelines that should lead me to something that will work in the end. But then you got to do it. So it's like, and that's why, one of the other reasons why I think that we always enjoy hearing disaster stories from our guests is because it makes us all seem human, you know, all of us makers, whether we're professionals and we do it for a living, whether we're professional hobbyists like me, where, you know, I love doing it, and we have it, you know, we have this channel where we're making something and we're actually doing it. So this is part of our living to create things.
Right.
But that, and then you have people who are just doing it completely as hobbyists, or people who are doing it for the first time. Everyone is going to fail at some point, and everyone is going to have to jump that hurdle and persevere through and decide, like we said earlier, do you stop there and not try again, or do you keep going until you get it right? Or you get it to a point where then you can make corrections and make yourself better.
Right.
And so we decided we were going to talk about the axe from a circular saw blade video today.
Yes.
Because that's the perfect video for this theme.
Can you give a little synopsis? And I'm actually going to try to run and grab a beer now that you've peer pressured me.
Sure. Yes. I know.
All right. I'll be back.
My first one. So, so with our, the video, I decided I wanted to make the circular saw axe video. It's just something interesting. I was actually, proctoring a PSAT exam a couple years ago. And while I was proctoring, I really wasn't supposed to be doing anything. I wasn't even supposed to be drawing or writing anything. I was supposed to be literally just sitting there and watching the students take their exam. But I was doodling, and I was taking notes on ideas for the channel. So I came up with this idea and drew this little picture of the circular saw axe. So a full tang axe made from a circular saw blade. I've got some circular saw blades, some big ones that are used for demolition on like cutting asphalt tiles and, you know, big kind of construction demo circular saw blades that are almost an eighth of an inch thick. So we decided to make the axe out of that. Had the thing, came up with the design, which I kind of designed the axe to be, or the hatchet to be, about a foot long or so, because it's kind of that hatchet length. And I wanted to use the Hudson Bay pattern head or the feel of that. But then as I started looking at it, I was thinking, well, it actually makes more sense to make the blade with a little bit more meat behind it, so a little bit more stability behind it, not so not so narrow or so short in the head like the Hudson Bay pattern is. So I went to the next, my favorite pattern, which is the Connecticut pattern for axes. So I decided, made the Connecticut pattern shaped head, drew it out on the handle, and then cut that design out and spray painted it onto, or, you know, laid down the template, sprayed around it onto a circular saw blade, and then went through the process of cutting that out using angle grinder and my the portaband saw and the grinding wheel, the 2x42 grinder that I have, to shape and get it down to the right size. So got it to where I wanted it. All the edges were cleaned up. Then I put a bevel on it, just a, a little bit of a bevel to start with, so do some pre-grinding before the heat treat. And talked about a convex grind, which is what axes have. So you have a grind that is convex on both sides. So it's kind of like an apple seed shape, you know, kind of smoothly sloping down to your point, to your edge, so that way you have some meat behind that edge to give it more resilience and more more structure behind it. So that way when you're cutting, your edge is not going to roll so much, keeping a sharper edge on an axe. So I put on the, did a little bit of pre-grinding, and then did the heat treat on the axe head. And this is where we ran into our first obstacle, our first mistake in the process, or our first, I don't know if it was an error or if it was just a mishap. I would say a mishap, because it wasn't like I don't think I did something wrong. I just think it just happened to go wrong in that situation.
Right. It, go ahead.
Something out of my control happened. Maybe it could have been in my control, but so I quenched the edge. I did an edge quench on the axe head to just heat treat the edge, because I only needed it. And I was going to get, you know, an inch and a half to 2 inches or so of heat treated hardened edge. And then the rest of the head and handle could all stay soft. It didn't need to get hard. There was no reason for it to be hard. So I did that, did my differential, quench. So I just quenched the edge. And then did some wire brushing, and then went over to my grinder to clean it up, to kind of get back down to that shiny surface, so then I could put it into the oven and do my tempering. but as I was walking from my anvil and my wire brush cleaning it up, I heard this like ping, a real high pitched ding. And I thought, you know, what went through my head super quickly was that something fell on the floor, a screw or a piece of metal or something. It heard a ping. It sounded like that, like a piece of metal hitting the floor. And then right. I was standing in front of my grinder. I was holding it and looking at it and getting ready to do some grinding to clean off the forge scale. And I saw what I thought was a scratch. I was like, oh, that's weird. Like, why is there a scratch there? I cleaned up all these scratches. So I looked at it and then looked a little closer, and I just turned around and looked at Devin. I was like, it just cracked. The whole blade cracked, and cracked almost all the way through from top, from the bottom to the top. A really good split. And it was really close to the heat treated line, really close to that the differential heat treating line. So I do believe it had something to do with that differential heat treat. I kind of asked the commenters and the viewers to chime in, and we've had a lot of people chime in, which has been really nice. But a lot of people talk were specifically relating it back to the fact that circular saw blades and any steel can have micro fractures in it that you just don't see. There were a lot of people who suggested that it was probably because of the edge quenching, that I didn't actually quench the whole head, that I thought, you know, that would have done it. But I don't know. I lean to thinking that it's probably had to do something with, there was some type of micro fracture, or, you know, something, some tension in the blade. I mean, this blade has been used and used until till the point where it's now dull, and I have it because someone threw it away. So it's been put under pressure many times and spinning at super high speeds and you know, it may have had some crack in it that I didn't notice or something. So, and the reason why I say that is because after that happened, I had to start over. Right. And so we're right in the middle. It's been a couple days, maybe 2 days of filming. Cause it was like removing all the material, doing the design.
Probably, it was probably, maybe two, maybe three.
Yeah. It could have been 3 days.
Cause that the edge stuff. And I mean, it all takes a long time.
Yeah.
Especially cutting these things out with angle grinder. Man, it just, it's slow.
That's a night of, that's, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours of,
just working on that time to get it.
Yeah. And if it, obviously, again, we always say that if it was just me in the shop and not you there filming, then that may take me 45 minutes or an hour.
Maybe, but
maybe less. Maybe
I would
not,
say something like that though, that you can't, I can only slow it down so much.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I talk for that type of stuff. I barely go like if anything, I'll just tap your shoulder, and all I say is like, "Hold on, Dust," and then, you know, I just move, I get around you, and then. But other than that, I don't think I stop you much. That stuff just takes. It's just the tools to do it that way without some fancy CNC machine or something like that.
Right.
That's just what you have to do. It's steel is tough stuff.
Right, and it's the different processes. Like I wasn't doing, you know, the Portaban only has so much throat. So much depth between the blade and the actual machine of the Portaban. Mm-hmm. So I can't just cut the whole thing out. Like that would have been ideal, but there's too much material there for me to cut around things. Cause then it'll bang into the inside part of the throat where the actual Portaban machine is. So I had to remove a lot of material first. So then do that step, right? You gotta get everything ready, get the grinders out, clamp it up, cut everything off. Okay. Now you got that done. Now I put that away and then I get the Portaban out. Set that up, get that ready, plug it in, get set up back again. Then I got to cut everything, right? Then, okay, now that's done. Now I go and I, you know, maybe use the grinder again, cut a few more things. Then I put those away. Then I have to go over to the actual grinder and then I use the grinder to shape everything. And I'm also, you know, I'm an artist and, you know, I'm a detail-oriented person. So I want to be really clean. I want to get all my edges. It has to look really good. It has to check off all those boxes in my mind. It has to be functional and it has to look really good and it has to be done really well. So I'm not going to rush it. So
yeah, the stuff you make aren't speed jobs for sure.
Right, exactly. So we, you know, start over.
before you say, I like normal when we decide to talk about a video, we rewatch it. And I had actually forgotten that it broke.
Oh, really?
Even though you had talked to me about what we want to talk about today and stuff, but I just kind of didn't. During watching it, I forgot that it was because I was thinking of other things.
Right.
So, and then right before it happened, I started to remember. I was like, oh, yeah. I got interested in it, though. I think that's great. What a great thing. It sucks for shooting because, you know, once it happened, we had to take days off for you to make it, and you had to make it on your own and blah, blah, blah. Because we get this thing in our head like, okay, we'll have it done by the end of this week and I can edit it and then we should have one out by next Sunday, you know.
Right, yep.
And then what doesn't happen, you kind of get bummed out. But, man, it's really makes for great content.
Yeah.
It was really entertaining. Even, you know, I guess pat ourselves on the back. I was watching like, oh, man, look, it did break. And I was like, I kind of had forgotten if we had shot the stuff of you making it or like.
Right, yeah.
But the time, since it's such a long video, you can just kind of live with it and go, oh, cool, he's done, and he's down here, and then he's got a new one.
Right.
I love that. A lot of, we keep going back to, a lot of other channels would do
That'd
parts.
That'd be the end of, like, part
That'd
three.
That'd be the end of it.
Yeah.
And then
you'd have to wait.
I it's much more entertaining to me, and those are the videos I like on other channels. Where they just go through and then they do a little smash cut and you're there a week later.
Yep.
It feels really good. And then, so go on from there.
Yeah. So it's gratifying. You're like, you're ready to watch the entire thing. You're ready to see how the story ends.
Right.
And then they end it, you know, and you're like, oh, and I gotta wait till next week. And it, like, obviously that's the other thing, right? If you don't follow a channel and you find a video and it's part three and it's interesting, then you got to go back and you got to find part one and two and you got to find part four, five, and six and however many.
Yeah.
if you follow a channel, right, you might be following along, but then that's frustrating too, because you get to a point where you're ready for them to do something and you're ready for them to move forward in the process, and then they cut you off and then you got to wait a couple of days, and then maybe the video comes out and you don't have time to watch it, so then you're waiting and then you forget about it, and then you see the next one come out and then you're two behind and
and they're like, wait, they got wheels on the thing now? When did the wheels happen?
Did I miss a piece?
Like, they're launching the thing? They're shooting the...
That is one of the things that I'm a little annoyed sometimes about with Wrangler Stars videos, that they don't really have the parts in them. It's just, it's a vlog of his life. Mm. So he's like working on one thing and then it might get mostly done. And then the next video might be something completely different. Or maybe he did work on it 4 videos in a row, but I couldn't watch 2 or 3 of them because of whatever, because life happened. And so then I go back and I'm looking for the next one, but it's not titled the right way.
Right. Oh, man. It's like when you're watching something on, out. You're watching something on one of the many different streaming services.
Yes,
and their ordering goes weird, and then you like somehow it skips one, and you're like, "Wait, she's dead? Why are we at a funeral?
Wait, huh? Where am I? Oh man,
why is he crying? That's weird. He's cool." And then I skipped over one somehow. It had auto played 5 seconds of the last episode last night. So it automatically skipped us over.
Last time on blah, blah, blah. This all happened. Wait, no. Crap.
They all died. I'm done.
We have all new characters now? What? It's weird.
Did they recast her? Who is that?
So I did. I remade the blade. took a day or two, or whatever, however long it was, to redraw, cut out, shape, get it, you know, do the pre-grind on and get it ready to now heat treat again. And so I did my second heat treat, and I did it the same way. I got a little bit more oil, so that way my quench tank was a little fuller. So that way, as I put the blade in with the handle as well, I can't, you know, trying to quench the blade, just the edge of it. The first time, because it was deep, I had to kind of put it down into my quench tank, and so it came at an angle. So I was able to do, you know, the 1.5 inches of just the blade fairly evenly across, and didn't do any, you know, wire brushing, nothing like too aggressive to shake it up. I just did a little bit of grinding to clean up the edge so I could see the steel, so I could see the temper, and got it right into the tempering oven. So looking back, you know, I think that... I'd want to say it made more sense to quench the whole thing, but in the tank that I have, I don't know if I could have gotten the whole thing in there. So even like the entire blade,
right.
You know, and that, I mean, and obviously I was only heating up the head of the axe. I wasn't heating up the whole handle and everything. So it would have stunned. It would have still done its own differential heat treating across the blade and into the handle. But I don't know if that would have made a difference, but it didn't crack the second time. So got into heat treat.
I'll say real quick, when you quenched it the second time, usually the way I'll shoot it is I go wide, right, so we can see the whole quench. If something crazy happens, there's like fire or smoke, you get to see it all, right? You want to see it wide. And then once it looks like nothing crazy's happening, then I'll jump and I'll get an insert of Dustin's face, right? And then I go to a tight insert of the thing getting whatever metal getting kind of mixed around, and that's usually the way I do it. So I did the same thing this time and went wide.
Oh, you put it in. Flames.
Yeah, you put it in. Nothing really happened for about 10 seconds. So then I go, I get low, and I shoot your face. And then I see the red on your face, and you go, whoa, 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 whoa. And then I slowly try to come down, I try to pan and tilt down and pan over, tilt down. And and I got some of it, but not as much as if I were, if I were focused on it. But it seemed like nothing was happening, so I went in for the inserts, and I was like, oh, man.
And that's actually a common thing that happens, especially with like differential treating, heat treating or quenching, you know, like an edge quench, because when you pull the steel out of the oil, you still have part of the steel that's really hot.
Right.
Because it hasn't been quenched. So that part of the steel is going to then ignite the oil that's on it.
Right.
So that's what happened, because I had quenched the edge. I was kind of moving it forward and back, and it was still in the oil, and it was kind of right on that edge. And then as soon as I pulled it up out of the oil, that oil was then now touching like the really hot steel, and it moved and it lit on fire. And that's what you see when people will do a quench and they'll pull it out of the oil and it does this big flame. That's because they're pulling it out when it's still hot. It's still hot enough to light that oil on fire. So I did see that same thing. I was like, oh man, missed the flames.
I know. I was like, oh man. So now I know, I guess I'll hang on it longer.
Yeah.
And if then I will, maybe I'll do my wide and then the tight shot on it just in case something happens.
Right.
And then I'll cheat in your face after of you just looking down at it, you know?
Right.
You could be right, we'll pouring still. Cereal, but as long as I get your face looking down at it.
Some sweat on me.
Is he in the kitchen? What is that? That's weird.
That's a weird cut shot. Yeah. 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 So did the quench. It worked fine. Got the temper done. That was good and all. And then we brought it back down into the shop, and I started to grind off the forge scale, you know, and the tempering scale and also all the black and all the stuff that was on the outside. I started grinding everything off, and I noticed that there was a twist in the head. Now everything had gone really straight so far, and I think it was just in the tempering, you know, in the oven at some, you know, sometimes in a tempering cycle, you can get warps in blades. And so a lot of people will temper with multiple blades together, all clamped together so they don't warp, or also using something like angle iron, you know, clamping your blade between two pieces of angle iron and then doing a tempering cycle, which would work well as well. But, so there was the twist. So the head, from the back, from the pole end, the top of the pole to the heel, so the front bottom edge of the blade had kind of twisted aside. So it's a little bit off from the handle. It's not a lot, but just a little bit. Enough so that as I started grinding, it wasn't grinding flat. It was grinding the two corners that were closest to it. And then same thing on the other side. So that's the second thing we ran into, where there was this mishap that at that point it's like, what do you do then? Do I start over again, or do I reheat treat? You know, do I try to straighten it by heating it? You know, and all these things went through my head, and I was like, well, it's not something that's going to affect the overall use of the axe. It's not, again, I'm not making this to sell to someone. So it's something, can I live with it or can I not?
Right.
And that little bit of a twist I could live with, but I also needed to decide and figure out how I was going to handle it. So that, you know, I would say, go ahead.
And just in a practical way, we can only start the project over so many times.
Right.
Like some things are just going to have to, that's, you know, for now it's good enough. It works the way I want it to work and it's just for me. So then you go, we'll just continue on and we'll figure out a cool way to deal with it, which is, I guess, what you're going to say, talk about next.
Yeah. Right. So then, you know, that takes us back to the mistakes or proof that you're trying. So what do you do in that situation? So I decide, okay, well, I don't want to use this on the belt grinder because I only have so much of a flat platen. I can't really get to the right angle. So I was like, all right, well, I'll just clean off the surfaces with my palm sander. So an orbital, a random orbital sander. I did that, and it actually gave a really beautiful, almost like a hammered finish, right? Because the random orbital sander is sanding in all different directions, and you're getting this overall random pattern that's not all one direction. You know, it's not lines like hand sanding. So I get this nice kind of diffused
scratch pattern, like a matte,
everything. Yeah.
Like a matte scratch pattern, kind of.
Right, exactly. And that was actually perfect for the surface of this hatchet, you know, the head that is going to be used and scratched and things. And so, you know, it's a perfect kind of medium finish that then lends itself to being more resilient over time. So again, I came to the point where I had a problem. I had to figure out a way to solve it. And the solution actually was much better than the initial solution that I was going to do, to the point where I would do that again on an axe head if I was doing that same situation. And I've done it on other small project knives as well, that I've just used that to sand it up to get the flats, that nice kind of matte, you know, brushed look to it. So did that, and then we ended up, so I pulled out some wood, found some random wood in my pallet stash that was actually maybe cherry, maybe oak. I've had people say that I didn't think it was cherry, but I didn't think it was oak, so I'm not exactly sure. But it was a nice hardwood. I pulled that out in a nice, you know, kind of warm color, which is kind of what I was looking for. And I did my handles, got you know, the scales together, cut out this really beautiful green, like Kelly green liners that went with the wood and just turned out beautiful. I love the way those look.
I think that was my suggestion, wasn't it?
It may have been, yeah.
Or, I mean, you had a few out, and usually as we're doing stuff...
I was thinking black. You know,
I'm the only one there, so it's... yeah, I'm his bounce board, right? So
right.
I was like, well, I like the green, right? It's a nature thing, but it also, it's that, yeah, Kelly green that...
John Deere green,
which is... Right. And I was like, yeah, I think that would really work really nice.
Yeah. Yeah, and that... I think... Originally, I was thinking maybe like black and black, like black walnut with black liners, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that might be kind of cool. But yeah, and then with the brass pins and all. So, but yeah, I do think that I definitely remember you suggesting green, and we kind of looked at it. I'm like, that might be kind of nice.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's super nice. So yeah, that that turned out well, and you know, did all the handle shaping, kind of general shaping first, and then cleaned up the front edge like I do, you know, the front edge of the handle, so that way you don't have to work any, you know, sanding into the blade. Glued everything together, and this is, again, so I ran into another issue here where I was using two-part epoxy from Total Boat, and it was an epoxy that we actually bought for my sailboat. We had to redo the bottom. There were some big chunks of whatever Bondo and stuff that are on the bottom of the sailboat that we had to fix and do some fiberglass work and do some filler epoxy work and clean up the bottom and get it really smooth on our boat, so we bought some two-part epoxy from Total Boat, and I've seen other people use it for knife making and for whatever else, so I don't know if it was that. In the video, I think I blamed it on the fact that it was a large flat surface that I was trying to clean up and get really flat so that way everything would fit together, but I'm not sure. I don't know why it didn't hold together very well. It may have been that I didn't add enough texture to the liner material, the acrylic. A lot of people ask us where I get the liners for my knives and things. And all of that is, it's all light, fast acrylic from a sign shop that my wife works at. She has all these cutoffs and scraps and stuff, and it's just they're just acrylic. They're just plastic.
Where would you get that if, you know, if you were someone else who didn't have a wife who worked at a sign shop.
Right. I mean, all that. I mean, I would get G10 or I would get micarta or, you know, different fibers, you know, different stabilized fibers and things that you can get from all sorts of knife supply places.
Isn't that expensive over something like a light sign material? Wouldn't that be more?
I don't know.
I mean, obviously, if you're buying the stuff that Nicole uses, it probably would be expensive because it's industrial. But if you could get something like it, or you could find somewhere, I mean, like, I bet you could, if you're really into knives and wanted that, I bet you could go to sign shops and get their cutoff scraps.
Yeah.
Be really friendly, say what you're doing, and...
Yep.
It's like anywhere. You just come up and they're just people. You knock on the door and say hello and tell them what you're into and maybe hook them up with a knife or something. I bet I bet you they'd give you scraps for life if you did that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think also, you know, just asking. Like I put a post out on the Facebook Marketplace a couple years ago. A couple of times, actually, I put a message out for scrap steel for practicing blacksmithing. I got a whole bunch of responses and got a bunch of scrap steel. I put out a message for small cutoffs of exotic wood or hardwoods. You know, I was like, I'm just looking for handle material, and tons of people use this stuff and just cut it off and throw it away.
Mm-hmm.
So I just reached out, you know, put a thing out there like, hey, if there's any woodworkers or people in the neighborhood or, you know, nearby that have some scrap cutoffs of different types of exotic wood or hardwoods like maple, cherry, you know, obviously anything walnut, and then anything more exotic from there. And then I got a bunch of people reach out as well. So, you know, just kind of reaching out to your community as well, I think is always good. And I do think, like you could buy boxes of that material. I use it because it's accessible to me and it does the job. And it's actually worked really well over the years on my knives. That handle is really the only one that's ever separated like that. The other ones have held together really well. So I don't know.
But it's also the kind of weird thing of being a 10-inch handle. Mm-hmm. Like you said, the variations of such a long piece of wood, and
right,
handles are never that big unless maybe you're doing like one of those hog splitters or something. But
right,
yeah, it still looked really good. I mean, yeah. when I got real tight at the end to do it, some
you could see
beauty shots. You could see it a little bit, but it's right. For what it is, it's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so that definitely, it didn't hold together as well as it wanted to. But I will say that it hasn't shifted since then, right? Mm-hmm. So it definitely mm-hmm. was in the clamp. Like everything wasn't clamped well enough together. So maybe it was my clamping, maybe it was the shape of the wood, whatever it was, it wasn't done perfectly. So the outcome is that there are some gaps in the handle, and you know, by that point again, what do you do? Do I tear the handle off and try again with new wood? Well, yeah, if I was going to be selling it, yes, of course I'd do that.
Right.
But I wasn't, right? So, okay, I can live with this because it's for me.
Yeah.
This is my prototype for something that might be fun to make in the future, but now I know. I've learned from that, right?
Right.
Next time I do it, I should do maybe angle iron, get like a long piece of angle iron and clamp on either side and then put a bunch of clamps so I get really good even pressure.
Mm.
It's all a learning thing, and it's all things that I've seen other people do and things that I've thought about, and maybe at the time it wasn't in my mind and I do the same thing I normally do, but then you got to learn from those mistakes. So, yeah, but yeah, I mean, other than that, you know, shaped the handle out and got it all feeling beautiful and it turned out really nice. And I love the green and the wood and it does, I mean, it does what it was designed to do. It does little limbing and, you know, little chores around and stuff. And that's, it's not the most versatile hatchet because obviously a hatchet is designed to split and cut. And, yeah. This hatchet is pretty much just a cutter.
you don't think it could split small, logs?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, it's not gonna split and separate, because that's kind of what you want. You want it to, like, as you split something, it separates, and it separates the grain. It pops the grain apart. But so it wouldn't do that. But I mean, I'm sure I could split, you know, a piece of firewood up to 3 or 4 inches in diameter.
Right.
And put it on the top and baton it like you would a knife.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's definitely better than a knife.
Right.
It has the splitting. Momentum. So it's got the momentum and some of the weight. And you can't start with a small split batoning with a knife, right? You got to stick it there and then start to hit it. But you could get a good start with that and then baton that a little bit.
Yeah, right.
And it will hold up, I think, and it's got so much more steel in general that it would hold up much better.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I really like that little... I think if you were to like, hey Devin, I want to make you something. Like if you gave me the choice to make me anything, I think it would be one of those.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really cool.
I'm trying to hint at a Christmas gift.
Christmas. You only have we got too many videos to make. So don't
exactly. We don't have time to make anything else. Oh jeez.
We have a lot of videos to do, so don't make anything else.
Yeah. But yeah, it turned out really nice. I was super happy with it, even with all the little mishaps that happened and the imperfections at the end. I did shape the handle to feel really nice. I know what I like in an axe handle or in a hatchet handle, so that turned out really beautiful. I love that. Feels great. Looks great. The green and the wood and the steel just goes together perfectly, and the brass and the lanyard tube and leather lanyard and all. It's a little beauty. I have it hanging up in the shop with all the rest of my axes, and I use it occasionally. It's nice.
A hatchet would be able to. I don't know. It had a real nice way of when you were holding that stick and just slicing down.
Yeah.
It had almost, it's got a bit of a sword quality. Because a hatchet or maybe an axe is so heavy, it's almost too heavy for light work like that, right? Mm-hmm. To just be chopping off pieces.
Right.
Like you could think of like a piece of bamboo.
Yeah.
Right. On like forged in fire or something. And you just go, chop, chop, right? And you can chop it down and get those. That would be able to do that.
Right.
A knife wouldn't, and a hatchet probably wouldn't.
Right, right.
But that, it has almost a machete quality or sword quality that a lot of other things don't. It was really cool. And the way, when you were slicing into it and making the spear point, man, it made short work of it.
Yeah, exactly, because it has that, it has the edge like a knife.
Yeah.
I could kind of hold it, you know, choke up and hold it, and it definitely has that feeling of something like a machete. Now, obviously, yeah. a machete, you have a long blade, so you don't have to be as accurate. But it had the weight, you know, the length and the weight in the head to give you a lot of momentum. So, I was cutting through that stick at the end, which might have been 3/4 of an inch or so in diameter. Mm-hmm. It was just chomp, chomp, chomp. It was just going straight through it.
Yeah, it's what a interesting hybrid. That's why I think I would like it. I don't know. I mean, you know, I got a axe for spudding, and I got a double bit, and I got a couple other things, but that's such a cool, weird hybrid, I guess. I think it would be a good camping thing.
Yeah, and there are other people who make similar things, like full tang axes, but they're using usually at least 1/4 inch thick steel, because then that gives you a little bit more meat behind it, right? It gives you some more strength in it, and it gives you an edge that can be a little shorter and can work as a splitter. You know, I was obviously using what I have, and that's part of you know, being a creative person as well, and just taking advantage of what you have, and being resilient and using what you have. I mean, I had another axe, another saw blade. If I hadn't had another saw blade, okay, same thing. We would have had to maybe use something else or just abandon the project. But you know, I have collected a bunch of those things, so I had it, so I was ready to go and persevere through all those mishaps and mistakes.
The axe machete. I don't know what you'd call it, but that'd be pretty cool.
Axe
sword.
Machete. I like it.
All right.
But, again, you know, all these things are really just to just emphasize the fact that there is an amount of perseverance that goes into making in general, and you have to be able to get through that, and you have to be able to understand that you're not always going to make something that's perfect every time. I think two other makers that I see that do that often, maybe not make mistakes often, but just are people who make things, are like Adam Savage and Jimmy DiResta. They both make a lot of things. And they're not like professionals at doing one thing. Right, it's kind of like the, what's it called? Master of none. You know, it's a jack of all trades. So, yeah, of course you can put some time and effort into doing really well with one thing, or you can become a pro at one thing. And obviously, something with knife making, you know, I spend a lot of time and a lot of effort in doing those knives really well. And I do want to produce, I will be producing some knives, the Journey knife, to be able to actually have something that is usable and makeable, that's professional, that I feel comfortable in selling. But also, you know, I don't want to stop making things and stop trying new things and be willing to try something and make a mistake and not come out with a perfect product, but be happy with what I had come out enough to be able to then be, oh, I can try this again.
Right.
Let me try it again. Let me try to do it better the second time around, or let me learn from this one thing, and I'll put it in that knowledge that I learned will go into every other thing I'll ever make in my entire life. Right. It's like it's the idea of building up a library of knowledge that then influences every next thing you make. Every time I make something, that memory and that knowledge of making that one thing will then always come into play. And I'm always going to think, am I clamping my handle well enough that I get, you know, there's no space between my liners and my wood and my steel, you know, every time, because I've made the mistake one time where it wasn't well enough, or, you know. It always comes to play, but I think that's the aspect that I love about making, and I love about creating things, and that I think that also goes back to tools, right? Tools have that innate use in them that then they can be used over time, and you can take all the knowledge that you learned from one project on this tool and a little trick you did one time, or, you know, cutting a certain way or holding in a certain way that didn't give me a blister, and now I'm going to hold it for that way forever or until I find a better way.
Yeah. So. It's like it's learning any general, even though it's a whole bunch of skills, but learning anything in general, and then having like these theories and things where when someone starts to explain something, you automatically go, okay, I know where he's going with this. Mm-hmm. I know what he's trying to say, and I can see where he's going with it. So you already have a jump on whatever new thing you're working on.
Yeah.
And that's all. I guess that's just time and
yeah. and all right, I think as content creators, and I think because I'm also a teacher, I have the mindset of, you know, what I know, not everyone else knows. So I try to talk through the things that I think are important. But I definitely jump over things that I take for granted. You know, standard measurements, you know, all these things that we do innately that I do because I've been doing it forever. I take for granted and try to think about those things when we're making videos. And sometimes I'll get not necessarily frustrated, but I see in other people's videos where the things that I like about our videos, I think that are, that they are a little bit more, they are a little more instructional. Yeah. Mm. Cause I'm talking about each thing in a way that I think it, there's, I talk about what I'm doing and why and the important yeah. parts of it. And then we'll show a bunch of it, you know, I don't have to talk about it. Or if it's something that I talked about a lot, we might not do it all the time, or I might reference another video. If you want to learn a little bit about this one thing, go check out this video. You know, I go into a little bit more in depth.
And I think some people, there's been some, the small bits of negative feedback is that, like, oh, you think you're some pro, you think you're some know-it-all, blah, blah, right, blah. Yeah. No, Dustin's just explaining the steps as he knows them.
Right.
And as he's going to do them, and as he thinks they will work out well. If it doesn't, we've had it in multiple videos where you go back like, well, that didn't work. Right. I yeah. thought this would happen, but it didn't. But it's just, it's not, we're not trying to make a how-to necessarily.
Right.
So we're not, it's not like the golden rule book, the standard for how you should do something. It's how Dustin's doing it, and he's right. explaining it. And a lot of times, he'll explain things that he wouldn't just because I'm asking him.
Oh, yeah.
Why is that? Why are you going to do that? Because I don't know nearly as much right. as Dustin does, so I'm always asking him questions if they come up in my brain.
Right.
And I think if I think it, then someone else would have, will have also. So right. you might, he's not talking down to you if it's a basic thing. It's probably because I'm standing there going, hey, why did you do right. that? Or yeah. what tool is that? Or how do you do that knot? Can you show it again? I want to see that knot.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a lot of times as well. You'll focus in on something and then I'll, you know, even if you haven't said why, the reason why you're focusing in, I'm like, oh, okay, that makes sense. You want to see this because you understand that the viewers want to see this because it's not, it might not be something that everyone knows or it might just be something that's interesting to see someone do it a certain way.
Yeah. And I think yeah. that's a good thing that a lot of channels that have two people
yeah.
Have it. It's someone else just to go, wait, what was that? Can you do that again real quick? Can you just say what you did that there real quick and we'll record right. it? It's I think it's good to have.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And good to, yeah, that is definitely a benefit for having more than one person that, you know, that, right. like you said earlier, you know, you bounce ideas off. What about this color combination? Or what about this? Oh, mm-hmm. that's kind of cool. What mm-hmm. about this and this? And I do hear that from other channels, other people who have channels where they have more than one person who are either working together or you have a cameraman or a production assistant or whatever it is, you know, having different people to talk about stuff and bounce, you know, ideas off of and get feedback from definitely helps to push your own mindset as a maker and highlight some of those things that we take for granted.
Yeah.
As makers, which is
just
cool.
Have a beginner as your camera guy and you'll be set. You'll have a lot of questions.
I'm like, why are you up on top of that table filming me now, Devin? Well, because from this angle, it looks really good. And you can see this and I can see this at the same time. And it'll lead into my next shot. Like, here you go. Perfect. You know your thing. I know my thing. And right. slowly we just build our knowledge together. That's great. Cool. All right. Well, yeah, you know, I hope you guys enjoyed that little in-depth look into that specific video. Again, before we kind of came up with that video to watch, I was thinking about doing something about it, like a theme of perseverance or how to keep going when you make mistakes. And that video came into my mind, but not specifically because of the errors that I made in it. It just came into my mind as one of the other videos that I really liked making and doing that we hadn't talked about yet. Mm. And then the more I thought about it, I was like, oh, this actually works perfectly. Because yeah. I even talked about it at the end of the video that you might not always end up with a product that's perfect, but it's what you've made is something that will enlighten you, teach you something about what you can do, it will still, for that thing specifically, it still works exactly how it needs to. It might not be as pretty as one that has no, you know, errors in it, but it does the job, and it does it for me, and it's and there's a story there now that I'll always remember, and it'll always influence what I do as a maker.
Yeah, and it's there hanging up next to all his other axes, so you know, you come and visit, you can see it, inspect it, and chop some sticks.
Chop some sticks, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, for kindling prep, man, it's no joke. That's the one you want. The little machete axe.
Yeah.
Max shitty.
All right. So recommendations. Yeah. I'm gonna start out. I'm gonna recommend an event that's coming up.
Oh, all right.
Now, I went into the Everyday Astronaut thing. I recommended his channel for all that type of stuff, but I'm gonna recommend. I think when this comes out on Friday, the plan is from SpaceX is to launch their Starship 50,000 feet high, turn it over on its belly, let it descend back down on its belly, then it's going to spin itself upright and land, and it's got three adjustable rocket engines on the bottom. What? Now, yeah, and that's here's the quote from Elon Musk. The goals are to test a three-engine ascent, body flaps transition from main to header tanks, and landing flaps. A lot of things need to go right, so maybe a 1 in 3 chance. So there's a 2 in 3 chance that this thing, the size of, like, it's huge. If you've ever seen it, it's the size of the Apollo, like, rocket. It's giant, probably a little smaller, but
billions
of
dollars.
It looks like a skyscraper.
Yeah,
but it's also so cool looking. It looks like a Buck Rogers Star Wars, like, rocket, like an old 50s rocket that you'd say. So they're going to do this. So you're either going to see this amazing thing go up, belly flop, spin, and land, or just crumble into the ground or water, and it's going to be amazing. Explosion. So that's probably good. So keep an eye out. It might be when this comes out on Friday, but I think they're planning. They got the rights. The FAA is going to let them do it sometime this weekend, I think. So that's going to be super cool. Super cool. That's their Starship. That's the thing that they plan to take in the orbit of the moon and then fly to Mars. And it's supposed to hold like 100 tons of stuff. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's so cool, man. And just watching even like the little jumps and stuff they've done so far with it.
Right. They've only done like 500 feet, 1,000 feet. So they're going to take the whole thing straight up, turn it over, flip it, belly flop it, and then come down and try to land it. It's going to be so cool.
That's so cool. And that's sometime this weekend, you said? Or
Yeah. You just have to Google it. They're not sure the exact time, but it's sometime this weekend.
Cool. Well, I will, I'll link to, I guess maybe I'll link to the Everyday Astronaut, because I'm sure he'll be there to watch it.
I mean, I guess you don't have to put a link if you don't want. I would just say you can watch it. You just YouTube it. First, Google it, find out when they're planning to do it. So this comes out on Friday, so it might be when this comes out.
Yep.
And just hop on Google and then YouTube it, and there'll be 20 links to people watch. Everyday Astronaut's great, but you can just watch the SpaceX. They do a great broadcast now too.
Right on. Cool. Nice. All right. Well, that sounds awesome. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. That'd be fun to watch. Like you said, there's a 1 in 3 chance it works perfectly, and a 2 in 3 chance that it's going to fall and explode and have a giant explosion. Which
so it's going to be amazing gonna be awesome. Either way.
And Elon will be like, okay, you know, check that off the thing. Okay, it didn't work. Time to build another one.
Yeah, and the cool thing is he's doing it so quick, right? Elon wants to go to Mars in his lifetime. So he said that he wants to die on Mars. So he's really, they're dumping so much money into it. I mean, they're already building the other rockets, as this one's not even, you know, launched off yet. They are just, they're ready to go.
That's amazing. Crazy. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, my recommendation this week is a guy that I've been following, not for super long, but someone that I really enjoy what he's doing. It's a knife smith, a blacksmith, a bladesmith named What is his actual name? John Nagel. I have his actual name, yeah. So John Nagel, John has participated in Forged in Fire twice. He won the first. He won his the first time he was in Forged in Fire season 5 episode 12. He participated in the season 7 episode 35. He was on the show Knife or Death, season 2 episode 10. He's a blacksmith. He's an army vet. He's a bourbon aficionado, and he's a great knife maker. I actually. Like I said, I've been following him on Instagram for maybe 6 months or 8 months or so. I can't remember exactly when I started following him, but I've been seeing his work. And I popped into one of his live streams over the weekend on Saturday. And he was working on a knife, working in the forge Saturday morning. And I popped in and watched for maybe half an hour or so before we were heading out to do some stuff. And it's good to see him, you know, chatting with people, and he was happy to see me there. He said that he was a fan of the channel, had been following and, you know, subscribed to our channel for a couple of years. So he was happy to see me there. And then, so, you know, it was cool to see him working on some stuff. We chatted for a little bit. And then, on the other day, you guys may or may not have seen that. If you follow us on Instagram and you happen to be on Instagram when we did a real quick Instagram live feed, from the shop the other day while we were working on the bow, just to kind of test it out. And he hopped on there right before my battery died. So, it's cool to have, you know, just to be building the community of, different makers, and it's always surprising when, you know, you see people or you know of someone and then you realize they follow you or you follow them. It's just, it's a really humbling thing and a really fun part about being a maker and being in part of this community and the podcasting and YouTube and a knife maker and a maker in general. There's really just this great community. So, he does some really awesome stuff, really great knives and projects and all sorts of fun stuff. So you can check him out. And his Instagram is at Nagel House Forge. And I'll put that in the show notes.
Yeah. So we'll have to, try to get John on and maybe do a podcast and talk about Forged in Fire and what he does and being a vet. All that stuff is really cool, really good.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and he's over in Michigan and followed by a few other people that I follow and that follow us as too. So, again, it's just like a little sight into the community of the makers. It's fun. Mm-hmm. Cool. All right, well, we are... have come to the end of this episode. Thank you guys all so much for listening. It's always fun. We really, really are enjoying doing the podcast, and it's great to hang out with Devin for another hour or two every week, chat a little bit, drink some beers,
that doesn't sound like it's so great. Hang out with him another hour,
another couple.
Like
hours.
It's not enough. We shoot all these videos together.
We have fun, and it's fun. Again, same thing. Just being part of the community. I listen to a bunch of other makers on the Makery Network. Listen to the Workfort podcast for Brian House. I listen to Knife Talk. I listen to the Handmade podcasts. I listen to the Simple Little Life podcast. I listen to almost all of them, and it's really cool hearing how everyone else talks about the community. You know, we hear other people talk about our podcast and shout it out, and, you know, I shout out other people's podcasts. It's just it's a great community. It's really fun to be part of the Makery Network, which is where you can find our podcast and find awesome other podcasters like us, other makers.
Yeah, awesome. And I want to say real quick that even if you're not a creator or you're not doing videos, but if you're making stuff and want to get in contact with Dustin or us, email us and DM Dustin on Instagram, The Art of Craftsmanship, or the email, theartofcraftsmanship@gmail.com. We respond to all those because, I mean, we maybe can't get to all the ones on YouTube because we get a bunch because we got a bunch of videos on there, but email and DMs, you can chat with Dustin and ask his questions. We will definitely respond to you and want to see what you're doing. And then bring you into the circle and everyone can have some fun and make some cool stuff.
Absolutely. Especially with Instagram, because, you know, we have, we're just about to hit 100,000 subscribers, which is just fantastic on YouTube. But on Instagram, we have, you know, just under 3,000 followers. So it's such, it's a smaller community. And if you send me a DM on Instagram or you tag me, I'm almost 100% going to respond and see what you're working on. So it's a great way to get a hold of us. And if you're interested in joining us on the podcast, you can, you know, follow us, you know, you can do us that way. You can reach out to us, or if you have something to contribute, or if you want us to talk about a video that you liked or something that you saw in one of our videos that you want us to elaborate on, definitely reach out and let us know.
Yeah. Yep.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for listening. This has been fun. Again, you can find us on YouTube, The Art of Craftsmanship. You can support us on Patreon at The Art of Craftsmanship. You can follow us on Instagram at The Art of Craftsmanship, and you can find us on the Makery Network and all of your other podcasting platforms, which I'm sure you did to find us here. Thank you guys so much for listening. It's been fun. Again, there's that watching that I like to do because we're so used to filming videos. Thank you all for listening. It's been great, and we will talk to you guys next time.
If you like this show, take a look at our other shows made for makers just like you at www.makery.network.